Righto, lucky last interview. It is the end of day two of OCAG 2024. For some reason, I keep saying 2022 when I'm doing things. But anyway, we're definitely beyond that.
Yeah.
Millie.
Yes.
It's our last future young leader. Become an old future young leader after Roberta.
Oh, no. I'm geriatric.
Millie, who have we got?
Roberta Marticoli is here with us. She is Italian originally, but you've lived in, what, four different countries before really immersing yourself in Aussie agriculture and aquaculture specifically. So yeah. Welcome, Roberta.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm originally from Italy in a small fishing village in the coast near Genova. By the Cinque Terre, everyone loves it because it's a beautiful place. And pesto and focaccia is like the most important and amazing food that we get there. But I also lived in French Polynesia in a little atoll in the middle of nowhere called Raroya, where I started my passion, I suppose, about aquaculture. I was working with pearl oysters and it was just fantastic experience. Very nitty gritty, like you had to go out and catch your own fish. And if not, you had coconut and rice, rice and coconut, coconut and rice. So yeah, very, very interesting experience. And then after that, I fell in love for a Kiwi guy. So that is now my husband. And I moved to New Zealand and did a PhD there in salmon farming. And then now I'm here in Australia. Yeah. What's next? I don't know.
Ollie.
Well, I'm interested. And you can educate me. I would think that the New Zealand aquaculture industry would be ahead of Australia.
Yeah. Okay.
Negligible. Okay, well, no. Let me ask a simple question. How come you came to Australia in and around the studies of aquaculture and the work you do?
Yeah, okay. So New Zealand is a fantastic country and there are lots of opportunities and lots of, well, I wouldn't say lots of aquaculture. It's mainly like mussels, we have oysters and we got salmon. But if we think about Australia, we have so many different climates. So that means that we can farm so many different species of fish, crustaceans and mussels or oysters and stuff like that. So there is a lot of diversification in Australia compared to New Zealand. I was very lucky that I got offered this postdoc. So once you do your PhD, you're like either moving into the industry or staying into academia. I wanted to stay into academia and I got offered this postdoc and I'm working with barramundi. So I completely changed from working in climate change and salmon. I'm now working with barramundi and fish pigmentation. So completely different world, but learning heaps. So it's fantastic.
And I think we can talk more about maybe the pigmentation of the flesh of the barra.
But yeah.
Farmed aquaculture, what are we talking?
Yeah, they farm barramundi. Yeah. So the whole aquaculture, like, when we're working with, I personally work with aquaculture, so not really fishing too much. But if we think about barramundi, it's a fantastic species. But most of the time when you fillet them, you can see that there is a little bit of that grayness in the fillet. I'm sure that you probably tried barramundi before and looked at it and you were like, oh, no, what's wrong with it?
I've got into making fish tacos.
Yeah.
He's never caught a barra though.
Yeah, oh, there you go. Yeah, but if you have a look at the fillet, there is a lot of grayness in the fillet and this, for the consumers, it can be seen as something that is old, that is not as fresh. And so if you go to the supermarket, you have no idea what the species is and you just look at white fillet and one that has a little bit of grayness, which one are you going to buy? Most probably the white fillet. And so for this reason, the industry is trying to understand why and what is that grayness in the fillet and how can we reduce it. So I can go on for ages. I don't know if you want to go in the science part of it.
Well, definitely. But I think we could probably go a little bit like broader and talk about the evolution of aquaculture and just fishing, like wild caught in general, and how it has evolved in the past couple of generations to where it is today.
Yeah, for sure. So aquaculture has been like around forever. Like it was, you know, if you think about Italy, that it was there, I think, at the time of Greek and Romans. So, like, it goes back a very long time. However, it stayed small for so long because if you think about it, right, if you're in a poor country and you want to go out and you want to have some fish, you can just go and catch it. So having that enclosure and feeding the animals and stuff like that, it becomes, you know, expensive and not as accessible as going out and get your own fish. However, we have seen that like 50 years ago, the decline of the marine life in the not only in the Mediterranean Sea, but in every ocean. So there is a drastic decline on the catch fish. And that's because, in one hand, we are now trying to fish more sustainably, but in the other, we are also facing the fact that there are not as many fish left in the ocean. So that's when aquaculture just started booming. So in the last 50 years, increased drastically, but of course has a lot to learn. If we think about terrestrial animals, we have like breeding programs and we know how to look after them. Like in my talk, I was talking more simply, like we can see if a pig or a sheep is hot because it will go in the shade, but for a fish, it's underwater, it's very hard to see. And if it's hot, cold, stressed, it always looks the same. Part when it's dead, then it looks the same, but just upside down.
I did love
floating
that.
In the water.
And what I find so interesting, I would say, especially for younger consumers, let's talk Gen Z millennials.
Yeah.
The likes of salmon is a huge part of people's diets. Like people really love to look at it.
Yeah.
But it does. And you mentioned it in your talk through Netflix and others.
Yeah.
There is a bit of a dark past and quite an unknown. And I say, I feel quite uneducated in terms of what actually happens in that industry.
Yeah. So I call it the Seaspiracy 2.0. That's what we need to go. We need to go around the world and just showcase all the great work that aquaculture is doing. I think that there is a lot of misconception. Aquaculture, as I said, is young. When you are a young industry, you can make mistakes. Like you are learning from how to, you know, farm those animals and you might need to have different temperature, salinity or different diets. So as an aquaculture scientist and as aquaculture in general is still learning and is still improving towards a more sustainable and productive industry. So that's the first point. And in the past, there has been some issues. Like, for instance, we see the salmon farming. Like there are issues, but it's not because the farmers don't look after their animals. Is a combination of climate change, is a combination of parasite that might be there. But I think that the biggest misconception is that two, actually. One is that we are not doing anything to improve that. There is so much research. There are so many people out there that are trying to improve and trying to reduce the skin lesion in the salmon. Like, you know, there are all these pictures of very sad, sick salmon swimming in the Scottish water and stuff. And he's like, yeah, okay, we've seen that. Fantastic. There are people behind the scene that are trying to do something. And I think that that is one big misconception that needs to be addressed by possibly media, by possibly talking about the fact that there are scientists out there trying and making a difference. Then there is another big misconception that is we are feeding aquatic animals such as salmon or other fish, wild-caught fish. That's kind of the past. Like aquaculture, it's over that stage. Like most of the feeds now are more and more sustainable, made from like leftovers or what we as human consume of the wild caught, and then they just make fish meals and including alternative diets as well. We are looking into farming black soldier flies, for example, to start feeding fish insect. So it's, I think that we need a Seaspiracy 2.0 where we just showcase the great work that is done.
I think you need to be talking to Olympia Yaga about her work that she's doing in farming black soldier flies. What's interesting to that, and I only saw something that popped up on my Instagram the other day, and I think it is, so there's an opportunity for media, but there's also an opportunity for businesses in this.
Yeah.
Patagonia, obviously, they're dedicating their business to the planet.
Yeah.
And at the moment, a big focus of theirs is in and around salmon farming.
Yeah.
And the footage they've got is actually like really shocking when you look at what the fish are like. And I think that's where in our conversations and things like that, At events like Evoke Ag, we actually, I think there's a role in acknowledging it and going, this is what we've seen.
Yep.
Let's now talk to that. And we talk about it a lot, Mill, in around, like, we want to understand what does agriculture look like today? Yep. And we talk about agriculture, we do it in the lens of sustainable food, sustainable fashion, and what that looks like. But then how's it going to be different in the future? And I think, as you kind of said, it's a new industry. And exactly as you said that, I was like, oh, that makes sense. Like, you don't expect children and teenagers and stuff to make all the great decisions.
Absolutely. And I think that if back in the days, you know, we had, I don't know, iPhones and drones to showcase what farming chickens or pigs or cattle was when we first started industrializing it, probably we did some mistakes and we still do. Everything that is done in big scale is going to have mistakes, but let's put those behind and let's focus on the good part, because we cannot all survive on tofu. It's not sustainable. And there are, as I say, 3 billion people that rely on seafood. And what? Are we going to just deplete the ocean alternatively? Like, I was once in a Seaspiracy. They were on the street, like, protesting and stuff. And I was like, hi, do you mind if I get the mic? And so I started talking and I was like, well, have you ever thought about going to a person in Vietnam and just tell them, oh, you cannot eat fish? That's all they got. So us as first world country, we also have a responsibility, which is to choose fish that are sustainable. So then there is enough fish for the people that actually rely on that as the primary protein source.
Following on from that, do you see the bulk of your work and the impact you're having developing countries or developed?
I think that, for example, for Australia, when we think about Aussie aquaculture, we're not farming fish to feed the planet. We are farming fish that are for elite or like chef, you know, that you buy at very good price and you eat at very lovely supermarkets. And we're not farming fish like such as tilapia or rice fish or whatever. I think that there is a distinction between farming in the third world country and in the first world country. The third world country needs fish for feeding them that will sustain them. For us is like more of a rich people food that we want to have. So there is two different kinds of animals here, I would say.
Hi, I'm Pia, horticulture and sugar analyst at Rabobank, and I'm here to share our latest insights on Australia's vegetable market. Did you know in 2023, Australia produced over $5.8 billion worth of vegetables, though only 4.3% of this was exported? Like many other countries, the Australian vegetable industry relies mostly on its domestic market. In fact, only 7% of global vegetables produced are traded between countries. But we are starting to see that trend change. Global trade is growing at a faster rate than production, and countries with low-cost production are seeing the highest growth rates. You can learn more about trends in the vegetable market on our latest Rabo Research Australia podcast, Mapping World Vegetable Trade, or reach out to me via the Rabobank Australia social media channels to learn more.
You mentioned something during your speech, and I'm not, probably not going to get it right, but it was something like a 35% reduction in fish or fish species throughout some sort of generation. Like, how is that turning around to now become this opportunity both in developed and undeveloped countries to be a solution?
So what I was talking about is that in the Mediterranean Sea especially, I don't know other stats. I just looked into that. In the last 80 years, the decline of the marine life has been huge. So it's 35% of the fish and 40% of the marine mammals. So, and that's because I suppose we were not aware of how to, you know, it's difficult to manage stock. How do you understand like where the fish go? They move, they go up and down the ocean, and it's complicated. So we didn't probably also know the impact of fishing that was what was happening in our oceans. But once we understood that something was happening, some species started to be classified as endangered, and there were some catch limits and some management that worked. And that's why I wanted to talk about the bluefin tuna, because that was a positive note. And I think that that's what we need to hear. Like, we cannot just keep hearing like all this negativity of we are losing all these species, we are losing all these animals around the world. We still need to have a little bit of positivity. Going back to what you're saying, I think that aquaculture can have that hand in hand with sustainable fisheries can have a very good impact into, you know, still go out and catch your fish if you want, do it sustainably, go out. But for the everyday person, why do we not eat farm fish? Like, have you ever been to Coles and had a look at the hundreds of tin cans with tuna?
Mm-hmm.
There are so many. I have a photo. I'm obsessed with it. There are so many. And then you multiply that for every country, for every town, in every part of Australia, America, Europe, Asia. Like, people will continue to eat tuna. They want to eat tuna, and they want tuna available at the supermarket. Now, how many tuna are there that we can, you know, keep taking and, yeah.
And not Yeah.
I think what was like so interesting about what I really liked about when you spoke, and I wish there was probably more of it, and this is feedback for Evoke, is that TED style talk.
Yeah.
Where it's you're kind of painting, and the way you did it, you showed here's a problem, here's how it's evolved, here's the impact of it, here's my take on it, how you're involved in it through, I guess, like your family's influence. Yeah. But then you also talked about, I guess, solutions and optimism. And I think before you touched on just that piece around like can't just keep leading with negatives, because it was funny, the panel that started straight after yours, someone came out and I'll paraphrase, but it was something like food system's broken. So, and I was like, shut up.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you can't just like, consumers don't want to feel guilty.
No.
They make so many other decisions in a day.
Yeah.
Give people like hope and optimism and be like, you can make a
choice. Make a difference. You can make a difference. Like I always take it as an example, free range chicken. Like, okay. Let's think about 5 years ago. I was a broke student that cannot afford free-range chicken. It was more expensive. Why would I buy it? But then slowly, free-range chicken, more and more people started thinking, oh, that's probably important. I can afford it, so I'm going to get it. And then more and more people started buying free-range chicken. And now literally I cannot find chicken that is not RSPCA approved or free-range at the supermarket. So as customers, we have a big power, which is we drive the market. So if we all start looking for sustainable fisheries or for sustainable aquaculture, slowly we're going to make the change. And that is what I'm looking forward and what I really hope that by giving some hope that, you know, consumers' awareness and by choosing and making conscious decisions, they can make a big difference. And yeah.
So if you could get like one key message or one bit of information through to consumers, customers to have that hope, like what would that one key message be?
My auntie once told me, you need to start from starting. So many people talk about, oh, certification, what is a certified sustainable RSPCA chicken? But you need to start from starting. Like, choose certified sustainable. Look for that little badge of certification. There is MSC. There are so many out there that are certified sustainable and not just dolphin friendly, because you go and see, oh, yep, this is quote dolphin friendly. But in reality, do you know if it's certified? So if I could ask something to the consumers and give an advice is look for that certified sustainable. It might be not perfect. It might not be the silver bullet that solves everything, but at least you are doing something good and you're starting from starting.
You know what I've got to wrap as, and I've thought about it while we're talking, is a joke.
Yeah.
Is it a fishing joke?
Uh-huh. Producer Andy, you ready for this? Okay. For our fishery expert here, aquaculture expert, why is there no tuna north of Australia?
Oh, I'm bad at jokes.
They're all stuck in Cairns.
You live in Cairns, don't you?
Townsville,
no, you moved.
Yeah,
it's only across the border.
Yeah, I actually moved again.
Think?
I'm in the sunny coast. I actually have another joke.
Did you like that one, though? Can we get a rating on that?
Yeah, no, it was a good joke. No,
you
joke.
Don't need to tell me it was
No,
good.
Let's go around. Okay, Milt, what would you rate it?
Out of what?
Out of 10. Can't choose 7.
6.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to be more positive 7 because my joke is not going
to
be so
we'll
bad.
We'll round that up to an 8. Producer Andy, do you want to weigh in on this as well?
5.
Tough crowd out the back.
Can I try my joke?
You sure? Because
actually I told his joke and I had a few people in work walking away from me.
We'll probably love it.
Okay.
Millie will.
How do you tell a fish to shut up? Shh.
That is bad.
What do you reckon of that? I feel like that's a 4.
8.
At least they'll find me after this. We got to wrap up all these jokes.
Have you got any fish jokes, Millie?
No, but I do when I go fishing with mates. We always say, like, oh, how'd you go? Okay. Oh, yeah, like, got them all. There's nothing left to fish. Oh. And so it's actually probably a really bad sentiment joke. And I'm going to stop using it after this conversation.
Please do.
Yeah, there's nothing responsible about that.
No, not whatsoever. It's not certified sustainable.
Yeah, cool.
Well, Roberta, good luck with everything that's ahead.
Thank you so much.
We'll be following your journey. Hopefully you're back on stage next year and at other events, because I think what you add to the room from an energy and insights lens, but also from an aquaculture lens, is so important.
Yeah, so. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll be buying tickets.
Yeah, fantastic.
Thanks, Roberta.
Millie, thank you so give her a quick pump up. What's a? You're only allowed like one sentence, footy style. Give her a pump up for the future.
I can't.
You have to. Come on.
Well, you use my word energy. If you can bring your energy that you brought on stage to your research, your team, whatever environment that you immerse yourself in, then the world probably will be fed through our aquaculture.
Oh, thank you. Touch my soul.
Not of approval from Ollie.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Perfect. Thank you. Well, that's it for another episode from us here at Humans of Agriculture. We hope you're enjoying these podcasts, and, well, if you're not, let us know. Hit us up at hello@humansofagriculture.com. Get in touch with any guest recommendations, topics, or things you'd like us to talk and get curious about. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. Rate, subscribe, review it. Any feedback is absolutely awesome, and we really do welcome it. So look after yourselves, stay safe, stay sane. We'll see you next time. See ya.